Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is Eye on Veterans Weekend, a roundup of the week's most important stories affecting those who served. Presented by University of Maryland Global Campus.
There are nearly 20 million,
20 million military veterans in the U.S.
Each week, we focus on their stories.
Powered by ConnectingVets.com.
This
is CBS
Eye on Veterans.
Eye on Veterans.
Welcome to another edition of CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm Navy veteran Phil Briggs. Eye on Veterans is a weekly program focused on the men and women who have served our nation in uniform and their families. We're powered by ConnectingVets.com, always a great place to find military news, veteran news, resources, and stories about the veteran lifestyle. We know, because we're vets ourselves. Considering this weekend started out with Valentine's Day, we're going to talk to a man that knows a lot about romance. Andrew Carroll will share with us some amazing love letters found at the Center for American War Letters.
The horizon has become thin strands from sea to sky of dark haze, a shy red, a yellow gold, and finally a light blue. It makes me smile when the first thought I have when I wake is of you.
And before she was the sweetheart of SmackDown, she was a rough and tough Marine.
You know, I could shoot a penny from far away, so hell. Tell me where the threat is, let's stop it, and I'll breast pump later. That was pretty much what I was sitting at.
We'll talk with WWE pro wrestling sensation Lacey Evans.
Lacey Evans, my goodness.
Now, before we get to the love letters and the wrestling segments of this weekend's show, I want to start with some news that affects the health of millions of American veterans who have served since the start of the global war on terrorism. And before we hear from our guest, let's hear about the issue itself from the former host of The Daily Show, a political satirist and comedian, Jon Stewart.
Post 9/11, there was a long fight to get New York City's first responders appropriate help to pay for medical costs from the long-term toxic exposures to the collapsed buildings in Lower Manhattan. The nation, and eventually Congress, stood behind our heroes. But now more than ever, we need to focus our support on the post 9/11 war veterans suffering from the debilitating effects of the massive toxic burn pits they were exposed to during service overseas.
That's a clip from John's appearance in a video you can find on YouTube entitled John Stewart Speaks Out Against Military Burn Pits, and it's put up by burnpits360.org. And that's just one of the organizations fighting to ensure that veterans get the medical benefits they deserve. And another one on the front lines joins us from the Wounded Warrior Project, and that's Derek Fronebarger. Derek, how you doing today?
I'm great, Phil. How are you today?
Hey, really good, man. Share with me a little bit, first, your title and background in what brings you to this fight for our veterans.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Derek Fronebarger. I'm one of the legislative directors here at Wounded Warrior Project. In my portfolio, I do focus a lot on toxic exposure-related illnesses and trying to figure out how we can assist those that are currently ill or injured due to those exposures.
Right on. And I can't say thank you enough for helping our fellow veterans and ensuring that they get the medical care that they need. As we heard in the setup, Jon Stewart's involved.
If you're one of our vets who's suffering, then we need to get in the fight for you now.
And I wanted you to kind of fill me in on how you got involved with that and the progress you're making on Capitol Hill right now.
Absolutely. As you know, Jon Stewart in the past worked quite heavily on the 9/11 first responders bill that increased benefits and health care to those that were affected by toxic exposure related illnesses while working on the 9/11 cleanup sites. And after that legislation was passed, decided to expand his reach and work with the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors on assisting the widows of those that have passed away due to toxic exposure illnesses. He got us in contact with, as you know, the comedian Jon Stewart, who is also passionate about this issue and indicated to us that he wanted to move from the first responder realm into the service member realm and see what we can do to assist veterans that are also seeing very similar illnesses from the first responders.
Yeah, man, he teed off on them and let them go from the bottom of his heart. And it's so fascinating how one of our greatest stand-up comics, one of our greatest TV entertainers, is now one of our most effective lobbyists and actually moved the needle on a bill that you just couldn't believe they were stalling on, or they were kicking the can down the road. And I know as Wounded Warrior Project, you know, as legislative director there, you see that all too often. Share with me where we are with the legislation and the protections that first our veterans need as they relate to the toxic burn pits.
Last Congress, Wounded Warrior Project actually saw that there was an influx and almost too many different proposed pieces of legislation out there. Because of that, a lot of members of Congress weren't really sure where to focus on the issue. Is it burn pits? Is it toxic-related illnesses in general? Is it PFAS? Is it Camp Lejeune? There's a lot out there. So what we decided was to build a coalition. To date, that coalition is called Toxic Exposure in the American Military, or the TEAM Coalition. It has about 22 VSO and MSO members that are formal participants in the coalition. And what we do is we meet twice a month. We talk about the current issues. We look for legislative solutions, and then we advocate to the Hill.
Let's drill down into the issue now. What is the legislation you want Congress to pass, and what do you want this law to specifically cover?
So the health issues are numerous, and as we were developing legislation as a coalition, we really had a long talk about what the focus should be. Should it be burn pit specific? Should it be toxic exposure as a broad issue? We decided to go broad on purpose. As you know, each conflict, each generation, we continually have to go back to the Hill, to Congress, and say, please expand health care and benefits to this group of people. A good example is Agent Orange. Then we had Gulf War syndrome. Then we had burn pits. And honestly, the community is just tired of always having to ask, you know, pretty much beg to get those people assistance. And a lot of times, for many people, it's too late by the time we pass legislation. What we're looking at as a coalition is to try and develop legislation that not only assists a broad group of people now, but sets up a new system to help people in the future.
What things should I be looking for to know if I'm eligible for any of these protections or any of the things you guys are fighting for?
You know, it's a great question. And it's such an individual issue. If you're looking at burn pit specific, one of the highest cases that we see are going to be lung related, constrictive bronchiolitis, lung cancer, asthma, excessive coughing. If you're looking at depleted uranium or the individuals that were recently identified to be at K2, there was a lot of chemical weapons, you know, and radiological and biological waste that was around there. So those issues can be rare forms of cancer. We're also looking at the generational effects of a lot of these toxicants. You know, spinal bifida is something that continues on just from Agent Orange and can happen to the children and the grandchildren of those deployed.
Now, let's talk about the specific goals here. What's a win here look like? What specifically do we want to have happen?
Well, as you know, the barrier of entry for healthcare at VA is to establish a disability rating. What we want to do, and there is precedence for this, is to develop a new priority group, a new subset that allows veterans who have been indicated to have been exposed to a substance healthcare at the VA. When we're looking at what is priority in legislation, we always look at saving someone's life as number one. Working on benefits comes after that. So in this legislation, what we're trying to do is expand healthcare for toxic-related illnesses at VA for individuals that might need it. From there, we're also trying to develop a committee, a commission that's congressionally mandated that would establish studies and hopefully look at new disability ratings that VA will take under consideration so that we can start that movement towards disability benefits.
All right, Derek. Well, I appreciate you and everything the Wounded Warrior Project is doing to hold their feet to the fire on Capitol Hill. And if you want more questions answered, you can go to thewoundedwarriorproject.org. website, or you can check out the VA's website. And I searched toxic exposure and found a page there in the public health section with a lot of different phone numbers, including a link to the Burn Pit Registry. Now, stick around, because coming up next, in honor of Valentine's weekend, we are going to hear some of the most romantic words that have ever been put to paper by American veterans in a collection of war letters. That's ahead on CBS Eye on Veterans. Welcome back to CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm your host, Navy veteran Phil Briggs. Now in our next segment, we're going to explore a romantic story that appeared on ConnectingVets.com. Quietly tucked away in attics and closets and basements throughout this country are millions of letters written by men and women who have served in the U.S. Armed Forces. Each letter is like a memento, a piece of history, and some of the greatest items one can find among veterans' possessions. Now, our next guest has curated one of the world's greatest collections of war letters spanning from the Revolutionary War to today. Andrew Carroll is the editor of the New York Times bestsellers War Letters and Behind the Lines. And Andrew is the founding director of the Center for American War Letters at Chapman University. Andrew, great to have you back on the show.
Great to be with you again.
Now, before we get into the love letters we're going to talk about here in this Valentine's-themed show, talk to me about the Center for American War Letters.
Sure. And just briefly, I mean, it's kind of ironic how this all came about, because I grew up with no military connections whatsoever. I really didn't even have an interest in history. And then my sophomore year of college, our house in Washington, D.C. burned to the ground, and nobody was hurt, which is the most important thing, but we lost everything. And it was really losing the letters that was the worst part, and because they're just absolutely irreplaceable. And so that's what kind of, you know, launched this initially word of mouth effort to ask veterans, hey, what do you do with your old letters? So long story short, that's what led to my creating a nationwide effort to seek out and preserve America's war letters. And what's so great about the letters is that they humanize these men and women who go off and serve. And so I actually got a collection upwards of about 100,000 letters from every single war in U.S. history, as you said, from the Revolution up to the present day. And so our mission is still to keep seeking out these letters and preserving them.
So cool. And I've been lucky enough to be at your place in Washington, D.C., where we've spread them out on a table and looked at some of them. And it is like a time capsule. It's like going back in time, like seeing the cursive that some of these, you know, some of the penmanship they used, seeing the stains on the corners of the page. I mean, it's just an amazing view into history. And I got to ask, how many of them are love letters in the collection?
Well, you know, it's I was just actually thinking about this. It dawned on me for the first time that the majority of the letters we have are probably love letters. Now, of course, we have letters between parents and their children. That's a different kind of love. But the letters between sweethearts, spouses, etc., I find, you know, the most moving of all the ones in our collection.
Now, I know when we got together this time last year, Andrew, we were talking about the poetic verse that General Pershing wrote to his love during World War I. Ever since we first met, you have been in my thoughts by day and my dreams by night. Your beauty, your greatness of soul, your brilliance of mind have been my sincerest inspiration and my purest love. I mean, they just don't write like that anymore, or so say most of my female colleagues here in the office. But that's not necessarily true, because you found an email which you shared with me from a sailor to his wife from Iraq. And this poetry is just some of the most romantic stuff I've ever heard.
One of the things I love about this email, so this is something he wrote to his wife when he was fighting over in Iraq. And as you said, it's by Petty Officer Second Class Edwin Garcia Lopez. And he was writing to his wife, Deborah. It is 0430. I again awoke thinking of you. It makes me smile when the first thought I have when I wake is of you. As I now gaze out across the sea, the horizon has become thin strands from sea to sky of dark haze, a shy red, a yellow gold, and finally a light blue. I look behind my shoulder and the coast of Iraq is still dark. I turn forward as the haze succumbs to a soft orange rising sun. Behind me, as minutes grow, the Iraqi coast turns a quiet blue with the increasing light. And once again slowly, another cloudless day awakens. I have watched dawn not break, but blossom. I can't resist telling you a dream I had some nights ago. I'm walking alone on a beach, and I feel as if I'm searching my heart for something to give you. I sense the distance, and I'm angry and at the experience, oceans and continents that have separated us. In the dream, I remember cursing you in two languages on why I could not lift and carry myself to you, to offer you something that would make all things right and happy. Later that day, as I remember the dream, I promised myself that given the opportunity, I intend for you and me to accumulate many pleasant memories that in retelling will keep us warm in our old age. My love, I wish I could offer you more. Yours always, Edwin.
Oh, man. That guy right there, Edwin. I tell you what, buddy. You need to write the card I'm going to give my wife this year, because that is amazing. And this next one I found really fascinating, not just because it's a war letter, but it is a war letter from a woman to her service member. Share with me what I'm looking at here when I see this picture of paper, yellow from age, and this beautiful cursive handwriting.
So what we have is a letter by a WAC, and so that means Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. They were female soldiers during World War II, and so this WAC, Jean Sobolowski, was writing a letter to her fiancé, and she sent it in late October because she knew it would take a while, so it's kind of about Christmas and gifts and things like that. There's just one sweet little thing I wanted to emphasize. I have a little trouble reading her handwriting, but she says, "When I tell the girls, Anne, Lou, and Betty, that I've received a letter from you, they always ask me what you had to write. And so I tell them that first that you think I'm a cute kid, but then I also say that I'm the swellest girl in the world." And it's just this very poignant, you know, just, you know, how much they love each other. And so she sent the letter off. And, you know, what we also looked at was the envelope that with the letter inside that was returned to her. And on the cover of the envelope is one word written in red that just says deceased. And that's how she found out that the love of her life was gone forever. And because they weren't married, she was not officially notified by the military that her fiancé had been killed in action.
Now, also with this collection was a letter that was not handwritten, but rather typed. And it came from the military. Describe that one for us.
One of the other things, and it was her. It was a letter from her her fiancé's commanding officer, and I just thought this is a really moving sentence. He says, "It's impossible for me or the boys in the company to express in words our feelings of sympathy for John's parents and loved ones," meaning, of course, her too. "His record was far above reproach, and it was a privilege to have had him in my company." And that letter is dated December 18th. So it was almost 2 months after she sent her letter that Jean learned how John had died. And the commanding officer goes into detail about that as well. And it's just, you know, this is the kind of sacrifice that we sometimes overlook. It's not just being in combat and the risk of losing your life. It's, you know, the how relationships were torn apart and just, you know, what these people go through in times of war.
Now, let's talk about the next letter, and you sent me over the words from this letter to a Werner Walty, and an unusual name and an even more unusual story behind it.
It's written by a woman named Marion. We don't know her last name, supposedly from Palo Alto, California, and this is during World War II. And so she writes, "Good morning, Silent One. I've been wondering where you were and have been afraid you would leave without saying goodbye. You may have gone already, but you can't be farther than my wishes, for your happiness can travel. Your Christmas letter and the beautiful El Greco statue are my treasures. Never will I forget that perfect Christmas day and your wonderful surprise. I love you for all that is fine in you and for all of your encouragement. My love goes with you. Affectionately, Marion."
Oh, so, can you imagine how that would lift up your spirits and, like, you know, you receiving that?
It would if the letter was actually real. And this is what I love about it. So I came across this letter. I did a trip around the world to almost 40 countries because I'd already visited all 50 states. So Scotland was one of my stops, and I was in the archive there. And so they showed me this letter. So it turns out that Werner Walty, who we talked about, was actually a German spy named Robert Petter. And he was in Scotland, and his what he was really there for was to see the Royal Air Force units and how large they were, because he was, you know, gathering information for Hitler and for the Germans to see, you know, how strong is the Scottish military. And so he had this fake letter on his person so that in case he was captured, he'd be like, no, this is my name is Warner Walty. Here's a letter from my girlfriend and so forth. It was completely made up. And so they saw through it and they realized he was a spy and he was arrested and was sentenced to life in prison. And it's just funny how, again, you know, you come across a letter and if you didn't know the context, you're like, oh, that's just a very sweet love letter. But then you realize that this is actually part of a much larger campaign as part of an espionage mission, really, and just how unusual it is. And so there really are, you know, all these incredibly unique stories that are still out there.
If you have some letters from a veteran in your family that you'd like to donate, or simply want to see more of Andrew Carroll's incredible collection, check out the Center for American War Letters at warletters.us. Now stick around as we go from letters to sweethearts to a Marine veteran that's quickly becoming the sweetheart of the WWE and pro wrestling. Lacey Evans is up next when CBS Eye on Veterans returns. All right, most of us know our next guest as the star professional wrestler, Lacey Evans.
Lacey Evans, my goodness, looks to rally and get back into this matchup with a boot to Banks. Trash talks and now continues to beat down Evans in front of her family.
So it makes me sick that you two are trying to use a 7-year-old to get to me. Well, congratulations, because you have got to me.
And now Lacey Evans said enough is enough. You don't go after my family or my daughter. And goes right after Banks. And now Bailey tries to get involved. And Lacey Evans is incensed. And Dana Brooke trying to pull Evans off Banks. Lacey Evans looking to beat the hell out of Sasha Banks here tonight.
Before she was a Barbie that could lift barbells, before she smacked opponents around the ring, she was a United States Marine. So I'm happy to welcome to Eye on Veterans, Lacey Evans. Pleased to meet you, Miss Evans.
Lord, thank you for having me. But if you ever refer to me as a Barbie again, I'm pretty sure you won't have a show. Do you understand me?
I absolutely love it. And that character that we see in the ring is fierce. And pardon my observation on the blonde hair and the nice, attractive look there and the style. Is that sense of empowerment, that sense of strength, something that you're trying to convey to your young female viewers and fans?
Well, I mean, they can, but it's funny to hear, you know, like you said, coming from the military where, you know, I didn't wear makeup at all and I was on military police on a SWAT team and now I'm referred to as a damn Barbie. I just don't know how to take it yet.
Yeah, right on. And once a Marine, always a Marine, which is what I love about talking to Marines. You know, one in that I'm a Navy guy, so we naturally give each other crap. But like, it's just funny that salty, that tough kind of attitude, you know, man, woman, doesn't matter. Marine Corps, you stand on those yellow footprints. That's your birthday. And that kind of changes you for life. Is that sort of what happened with you?
Absolutely. You know, having a rough upbringing, and I say this all the time, the Marine Corps definitely instilled the values that I have today. And it just formed the woman that I am today. So I give the Marine Corps credit for not only my grit, but my discipline and my drive. And so, you know, I always tell everybody the Marine Corps saved me and definitely built me up to be who I am today.
Talk to me about your journey there, as this is Eye on Veterans. We'll get to the superstardom and the fame of being a wrestling personality, but talk to me about, you know, what got you into the Marines? Why Marine Corps? And what was your journey there?
Oh, it was very short. I was in college in Louisiana, and I was taking care of, you know, being there for my family and taking care of them. And my father was an addict, and he suffered with depression and anger management. He was mentally just unstable, and he has been my whole life. But I have a bunch of siblings. So, you know, I graduated high school out of Florida, followed my family down to Louisiana so I could be there, you know, when they needed anything, when the drugs got worse or the jobs didn't come through. And I just realized that, you know, I can't continue to live like that. I can't enable the drug addicts and the people that don't want to change. And that's what I saw myself doing year after year. And so at 19 years old, after, you know, changing colleges from Florida to Louisiana to be there and to try to stop the addiction, to try to fix the depression, to try to get my family to get clean and happy. And I realized you can't force that upon anybody. Like the saying, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And that's what I found myself doing across the board with my family. And financially, I was supporting them and you know, just being there, period. And it took a toll on me. And I knew that there was something more out there. And I knew that I had done all that I can do and that I needed to make a decision in order to break the cycle and change this lifestyle. And that, 'cause that's all I knew. I didn't know what I wanted to be, and I didn't know what else was out there, but I knew what I didn't want to be, and I knew how I didn't want to end up. The Marine Corps was, you know, when I went to the recruiting station, believe it or not, I didn't understand the difference between the branches, you know, Army, Navy, Marines. I, you know, we didn't really watch TV growing up, and I'm from the South, and in my, you know, my father wasn't in the, you know, military. And so when I showed up to figure out this option, because I, one thing I did know, regardless where you go, once you sign that contract, they ship you off and you can't come running back to answer the addiction calls and the depression calls and the suicides and the overdoses. You can't do that anymore. You have to go push forward and, you know, take it every day. So I showed up at the recruiting station and nobody was there. It was after a long shift. And I, you know, like I said, I was in college and I was working two jobs, and I went to leave and a Marine pulled up and he explained to me the difference between the Marine Corps, Army, Navy. And I said, absolutely. It's give me the hardest thing that you can, because I've been through hell in my life and I want to be challenged to the brink of wanting to quit. And I knew that the Marine Corps was what was going to do that after hearing the differences. So there was no other option. And military police, obviously, what better way to continue to stop the negativity in life, to be there to stop the threat. And literally when I say threat, it's not only, you know, guns and weapons, the threat of addiction, the threat of depression, the threat of domestic violence and physical abuse and mental abuse. Like, to me, that was just everything that I wanted to embody and be in as a military police officer and the United States Marine Corps.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's beautiful. I mean, just the way that you can go through something so bad and you can turn it into something so incredibly good. You know, that's what some of the greatest Marines and soldiers are made of. Did you find that, like, the Marine Corps wasn't quite as scary as you thought it might have been when you got there, having had your background?
Absolutely not. I mean, my father is a huge man. By the time he died, I mean, I had to pay an extra fee just to have him cremated because of his mass and his size. He was also not only huge, he looked like Hagrid off of Harry Potter. Like, he's just a big man, the biggest hands, the meanest voice. And he was the meanest person to date that I have ever met in my life. And that says a lot coming from, you know, your higher ups or Marines, you know. But
yeah, sure.
It was, so I went from, you know, having this massive father who, you know, did what he did to me and my siblings, and his anger and his aggression and his depression and the addiction. And you put all that together and you make that explode. And this is my life, you know, growing up when I was little, and I would be sick to my stomach getting on the school bus to go home. Now, getting on to go to school, I was happy as hell, but I was sick, physically sick, to even go home as a child, because you never know what to expect. You don't know what you're going to find. And so when I joined the Marine Corps, it went from this, you know, huge man that was supposed to love me more than anything in life, physically, mentally, and emotionally tearing me down and my family down and my, you know, and then I go to these drill instructors, no offense, you know, it was hard as hell. It was mentally very tough, but, you know, to these drill instructors that are, you know, not as big as my dad, not as mean as my dad, and they aren't supposed to love me anyway. So it's like yell at me all day. You know, I've been there and done that times 10 with, you know. So yeah, it was definitely my father, without him even knowing, prepared me to be one hell of a Marine and be able to take a lot, not only physically, not only mentally, but emotionally. So the 3 months of boot camp was, I guess, a little fun in a sick way because of what I've been through.
Wonderful. And we'll call that the silver lining. And to every dark cloud, I am certain there is one. And you are a living example, an embodiment of that. Talk to me a little bit about how you ended up with Special Reaction Team within the Marines, and kind of where your tour in the Marine Corps took you.
So that was a funny story, but I did really well in all my schoolhouses. I was company's highest shooter out of boot camp. I was honor graduate out of military police school in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and honor graduate out of corporal's course. So all these things that I was doing, you know, as being on a road MP, which is military police. And I also had a daughter. So it was hard with that transition because obviously being a female in the Marines, you're already very low percentage of females. So you're already looked at and expected to push, move above and beyond. And I get it. You know, females need to hold their own weight. And I completely agree with that. But then when you become a mom, it's like, damn, now I really have to step it up because, you know, you only get roughly 6 months, I think, at the time between birth to getting back in the fight and being able to do what you were expected to do prior to any of this happening. So I really wanted to be SRT because I excelled very well in as an MP. And SRT was a specialized unit, which civilians refer to as kind of SWAT team. Hmm. But, you know, you have to prove you have what it takes to do that job. And here I am with an infant who is still, you know, excuse my French, but still breastfeeding. And I'm trying, you can't touch the LP, which goes on your weapon. But here I am wanting to be a special reactions team and go in every day and prove to this small unit, this small group of men that I have what it takes to in order to do that.
And we'll hear the rest of that story when CBS Eye on Veterans returns. Welcome back to CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm your host, Navy veteran Phil Briggs. Now, our last segment, we met WWE pro wrestling sensation Lacey Evans. And while I made the mistake of calling her a Barbie that can lift some serious barbells.
Lord, thank you for having me, but if you ever refer to me as a Barbie again, I'm pretty sure you won't have a show. Do you understand me?
Oh, and Lacey Evans, my goodness.
There's no mistake that she was born tough enough to be a Marine.
To these drill instructors that are, you know, not as big as my dad, not as mean as my dad, and they aren't supposed to love me anyway. So it's like, yell at me all day. You know, I've been there and done that times 10.
We heard about her tough upbringing, dealing with an abusive father and a horrendous home life.
But I was sick, physically sick, to even go home as a child.
And then she shared how she ended up finding a new life as a Marine and then a mom. Now, our interview picks back up where Lacey was describing trying to become a military police SWAT team member while still trying to raise her infant daughter.
And here I am with an infant who is still, excuse my French, but still breastfeeding. And I'm trying, you can't touch the LP, which goes on your weapon. But here I am wanting to be a special reactions team and go in every day and prove to this small unit, this small group of men that I have what it takes to in order to do that. So I'm breast pumping in one, got my rifle ready in the other, dropping my milk, grabbing the rifle and doing everything physically and showing my mindset, my tactical ability. So it took a while to prove to these men, and plus juggling being a wife and being a mother and it was, like I said, with an infant, which was the most hilarious part. There were times that, you know, we would be on the gate and I would have to pump because I have a, you know, got the chest plates on.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got all this milk and here, you know, I'm like, you know, so I would run to the bathroom, pump it, throw it in the refrigerator, grab my weapon and get back in. And so it was like, it was pretty hard juggling all that, but I knew I had what it took. At the end of it, after going out to the firing line, showing them what I'm capable of, showing them quick reaction decisions on my side, tactically, I did it. And I made them believers in what I'm capable of. And lo and behold, they hand chose me to be part of the team.
Forget Rosie the Riveter. Mom SWAT team badass sounds so much cooler. So,
dripping milk at the same time, brother. Can you imagine that? Freaking sour milk smell. But here I was because I could, you know, I could shoot a penny from far away. So hell, tell me where the threat is. Let's stop it and I'll breast pump later. That was pretty much what I was sitting at. But, you know, that just shows you what women are capable of.
No doubt, Lacey. I can say it runs the same in my house. No questioning the power and the strength of the almighty woman. Now let's talk, because it sounds to me like you've got one heck of a career in law enforcement ahead of you, yet somehow you end up in wrestling and, you know, a national sports celebrity. How did it happen?
Well, that was interesting too, because I knew that I was going to probably like go FBI, you know. I love like the interrogation side of it as being a police officer, but there was a staff sergeant that was stationed in Parris Island. And he did what it was, backyard wrestling. Now, I had never heard of WWE. You know, I'm a Southern girl, didn't have much growing up. I lived in tents and trailers and had a rough upbringing. We didn't sit around with mommy and grandpa around the TV watching wrestling. You know, that just wasn't my life. So when he said he did backyard wrestling, I was like, well, what is that? And it was kind of funny to me. I wanted to see it. And I went on a Saturday and I saw him perform. And I just, the kids in the audience, you know, there was only, there was less than 20, but I knew immediately I wanted to have something to do with that because, you know, I carry a bunch of anger and a bunch of grit anyway. And if I could use that in a ring to tell like these stories and then have these little kids, the way that they're impacted from this sport was interesting to me. So one thing led to another, and the next weekend, I actually came out and did a show. And within 2 weeks, I was in contact with WWE for a tryout.
Wow, like a natural standout in the audience or at one of those events that they just saw you and immediately saw you could shine. Wow, amazing. How close was that to the end of your time in the Marine Corps then?
That was literally, this is how God is. This is how good God is, because I was supposed to choose to either reenlist or EAS at the same time that WWE contacted me. And so it worked out so perfectly that I got out in October and I started in April.
Oh,
so talk
wow.
about transition and how hard it is for the military to get out of active duty and try to find a civilian. Like, God is that good, because there was no transition for me. When I got out of the military as active duty, I had 3 inactive reserve years, obviously, you know, but I went straight into WWE.
Yeah.
I was still active duty at my tryout. My master guns, I had to tell him, you know, I was like, yeah, I've been doing this backyard wrestling. And he's laughing. And I was like, but there's a 3-day tryout. So long story short, he gave me 3 days of leave to go out and try it. And I came home kind of like, there's no way they're going to hire me. And they called me on the phone and said they want to offer me a contract within months. So
that is awesome. And what I really like about that is it highlights the importance of what I like to think of as facing forward or looking out the windshield. A lot of veterans, a lot of folks in the community tend to, like, they get out and then they keep looking backwards. They keep looking back at the days and the times with their bros and their friends. They keep looking back at the time with their teammates. And that seems to be where their focus is, kind of rearview mirror. And when I hear your story, it's like, man, you get out and immediately, boom, forward, forward, forward. You're looking at this new job. You're looking at tryouts. And I'd imagine, had it not gone that way with the wrestling, you'd have still been forward facing. You'd have still been looking to keep that momentum going into something positive for your career. So that's awesome.
Absolutely.
All right. One more thing I want to ask you about while I got you here. I've seen you work with another gentleman that I've interviewed, another great veteran, Montel Williams, on the TV show Military Makeover. Tell me about your involvement there, because I absolutely love talking to Montel.
Oh, he's incredible, and what he stands for and what he does for not only our military, but our veterans and their families. So I go and help host Military Makeover with Montel Williams on Lifetime. And believe it or not, we actually have our season premiere on Valentine's Day, February 14th. And it's actually going to focus on the U.S. Navy veteran, Chris Hickson. And he's actually one of the men that ran in during the active shooting that happened at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on February 14th. So this all comes back to, like, not only giving back to veterans and their families, because as a veteran myself, I know what they go through. And it's hard. It's hard as it is. But this man gave his life to protect these babies at this high school, because he was a veteran already. He got out of the Navy, but he was in the sports athletics, I believe. And when that shooter came running in, he ran after him and he did what he could to stop the threat. However, it didn't end up the best. But what Montel Williams and Military Makeover on this show, we actually go in and help his widowed wife and his son that suffers with disabilities completely renovate their house. So not only being a WWE superstar, but being able to give back to the veterans and their families is what really motivates me to continue to do what I do. And it's incredible. It's a tearjerker. It's probably one of the hardest ones that I've had to do to date, but it was completely worth it. So if you guys get a chance to watch it, definitely tune in and get some tissues, because it's incredible and it's motivating.
Well, all right, I will have the tissues in hand, and I've seen that show before. Just absolutely incredible, the work you're doing there. And I look forward to seeing more of you, a Marine, a mom, a WWE superstar. Lacey Evans, just so good to meet you.
You too. Thank you so much.
You can see more of Lacey on Military Makeover with Montel on the Lifetime channel, and you can see more of this WWE wrestling superstar at WWE.com. Just search Lacey Evans. And you can catch this show as well as other episodes at ConnectingVets.com. I'm your host and proud Navy veteran, Phil Briggs, and I'll be back next week with more great stories on CBS Eye on Veterans.
Eye on Veterans Weekend has been presented by
University of Maryland Global Campus. Choose from 90-plus programs and specializations to accelerate your military or civilian career. And find out how our dedicated military and veteran advisors can help you navigate your benefits to save you time and money. University of Maryland Global Campus. Find out how we're made for you. Visit umgc.edu.